Tonight on Pretty Late, we look back 75 years to one of America's most defining moments as a country, Pearl Harbor. Veteran Victor Lagroon from Chicago's Office of Veteran Affairs joins us, along with author Craig Nelson, to talk about it all, right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
It is Wednesday, December 7th. We are in the Allstate Showcase studio, and thank you so much, Bennett, for making sure that we had some guests that would reflect the importance of this day. I don't think that we honor it. I don't know what it was like. Obviously, it's 2016, and to us, September 11th was what people recognize as being very similar to Pearl Harbor Day, when America was attacked by the Japanese, an ambush, a stealthy, just an amazing feat of just deliberate hostility, obviously, but in order to subdue Americans, to drive us into cowering, to thinking, well, Japan really means it. You know what? We're not going to bother with them. And they intended to destroy our entire naval fleet in Hawaii. And of course, history has shown that we not only joined World War II. What is it, Brandon? What do you want to say?
Dimitri was just moving his mic and it squeaked and I laughed at it. It's, I did a very inappropriate time to laugh. Please continue.
I know. I'm like, what? Because you're younger than me. And I wonder, because you and I were talking last night about the importance of Pearl Harbor in our history and the effects of it. You just came back actually from Hawaii.
I was at Pearl Harbor to
visit the USS Arizona.
Mm-hmm. And we went into the Bonefin? Bonefish? Oh, no, it's the submarine, the World War II submarine that's there. And that was just absolutely super cool. There was 9 of us in there, like tourists, and it was saying like 36 men like manned it. And I was just thinking, man, I'm freaking out right now, claustrophobia wise.
Right.
I can't have 36 people in here. It smelled so bad.
Well, when you think about the distance our military came from World War I, and in order to step up, to ramp up, to be ready for the next thing that happened, was where we were in 1941. We were also suffering from a Great Depression, and there were people in the United States who wanted to have nothing to do with the rest of the world, did not want to know what was going on.
Nationalism. That's weird.
Yeah, a little bit of nationalism, a little bit of fascism, a little bit of demagoguery going around in the world. So we're going to talk more about that. After 11:30, we're going to talk to Victor J. Lagroon, who is the director of Chicago Office of Veterans Affairs. And after midnight, we interviewed Craig Nelson, who is the author of Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness. So we're going to talk a lot about that tonight. It is an important day. And, you know, there's so much going on in the world that you also have to, you know, slow down and take time with your family. I just came back from Winter Wonderfest at Navy Pier, and we're having a good time. And we also have in studio, this looks like complete comfort food, Dimitri's pizza. Thank you so much for bringing in macaroni and cheese pizza. Seriously?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what's happening?
Oh, that's exactly what's happening. Don't forget barbecue chicken, cheddar, bacon, ranch.
I won't, but I've had barbecue chicken. And you, by the way, Brandon told me, he asked me what kind of pizza I wanted tonight. And I said, I like cheese. I like mushroom pizza. Yeah.
Don't worry, I didn't
that
matter.
Was, he said I wasn't able.
I could have brought it.
I know. No. But he said, you can't do that because I can get that anywhere. I can't get macaroni and cheese or barbecue chicken, bacon, and ranch.
That's correct.
It was exactly what Brandon said I had to have.
And to be fair, you can't get the quality sauce, even just red sauce, that you can get at Demos Pizza anywhere else. So not to belittle the pepperoni or cheese selections that they have, but you got to go all in because nobody else is offering what this is.
And you're very passionate about this pizza.
I made it for 3 years.
Very well, I might add.
And you have locations in Wrigleyville and in Wicker Park.
That's correct, yeah.
So when everybody was jacking up prices, now I remember seeing this story come across where a lot of establishments were saying, you know, if you want to be at whatever restaurant to watch the World Series, it's going to cost you $100 to be here. And everyone was adjusting. Now, you inflated your prices, and why did you do that?
Well, yeah, so we're maybe like a stone's throw away from the stadium, and us and maybe it was a couple other bars in the area kind of had the same similar philosophy, is that like, hey, this is a great thing for Chicago, and it's important that we do raise our prices because we're going to be feeling a lot more, let's say, work. But what we decided to do is we took half of that increase and we gave it directly to the people that were doing the work. So the staff all got a huge bonus for doing it. And so that what that meant is that, you know, we ended the series.
Yeah,
we're on a high, and everyone got a huge bonus, so people were real happy.
That's wonderful, because it was. I mean, like, as you guys were, how much did you get to pay attention to the games at all?
No,
not even
single. Like, we won, and I was like, wait, what? Oh, it's been over for 30 minutes. Great. Awesome.
I didn't
nice
even think
job.
About asking
didn't
you
even,
that. That's
didn't
awesome.
Didn't even have any clue, you know?
Well, because Elliot Serrano and I were at another location. I almost feel bad now saying where we were.
It's okay.
We were at Marie's Pizza and Liquors over on Lawrence Avenue, which is where my dad used to hang out. So that was one of the reasons I went there. But, I mean, here's the thing, and Brandon brought this up too. People are going to camp for hours.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some logic to charging people a different price. Because we were there, we would get there at like 5 o'clock and leave at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And you've got a waitress who's been taking care of us for now 6.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to give her $10, you now have given her what? About a buck and a quarter? I'm not doing the math.
It is not bad.
A buck and a
quarter. Nobody here is calling you
out. Buck 20.
Gosh, now I feel like, did we tip enough? We should go back and tip her some more.
No, we're okay. We tipped a bit, and they got a lot of publicity. I mean, considering how much Facebook Living we were doing.
Oh, we were Facebook Living everything. Yeah, you did you get a lot of that social media at Dimitri's?
Is it Demos?
Demos.
Yeah.
Well, right. It's your name is Dimitri.
My name is Dimitri. The store's name is Demos.
Demos.
Certainly. We definitely encountered a lot of that camping stuff. And it's strange because we're a pizza shop. We do pizza by the slice. You can't order another drink, It's hard at a certain point to order like 7 slices.
We know.
You can't quite do that, right?
Elliot, would you say we know? We ate a lot of pizza.
Everything. Pizza.
That dessert platter she had.
How many dessert plates? We just kept getting more food while we were
and
there.
And coffee. We would switch from booze to coffee was what we were doing.
It's harder when you specialize. You know, I mean, you specialize, you make your product amazing. But it is. It's like, would you like another 12-inch sausage pizza?
I did go around the tables and say, you're going to need to order something else, and that's exactly what everybody did.
Oh, sure, I would. Yeah. It's the price of doing, you know,
business. The free market speaks in a day like that, you know what I mean? You can't be the only person who's not charging more.
But we felt pretty good about what we did, you know, because obviously the people that are doing the work, those are the people that, you know, deserve a little bit of the reward, and so to be able to give back to that was like, you know, felt really good. And like I said, it just made everybody feel like the work that they did was valued. And I think in a business, I think that's like what's most important.
Again, we are hanging out with Dimitri, who has Demos Pizza in Wicker Park and Wrigleyville. You can go to demospizza.com where you can order online as well. I want to find out more about your pizza and where you came from. By the way, amazing voice.
A face for radio.
Well, thank you.
That's not what I said. You have a great voice. And we also have Elliot Serrano, who's a little bit later going to tell us about the Anti-Cruelty Society and what you need to know during this holiday season. You can buy a gift card, make a donation to some of the charities that you are passionate about, including the Anti-Cruelty Society, in someone's name as a gift. And I think that's a great way to go. Brandon C. Price, who is the CEO and mastermind behind Vamp, a comedy, music, and drinking show at...
2 years.
Music, comedy, and drinking show. Music, comedy, and drinking show.
It's been 6 months since you messed that up.
I know. I was trying to do all 3 in a row and get everyone's intros correct. Music, comedy, and drinking show at MCL every Friday and Saturday night. But this month they have Unwrapped.
Yes. Okay, you've redeemed yourself completely. Thank you very much. Unwrapped, it's our holiday special. We've only have 5 more performances. It's Thursdays at 8. It's Vamp, but it's also a little bit more cabaret, a little bit more casual. But it's still BYOB, and it's still an incredible amount of fun. And no matter what holiday you celebrate, you should be celebrating it with us.
I agree completely. Well,
it's a good time.
Let's celebrate together. I think we're doing whiskey and a cookie later, too. I think that's really going to be able to be on the docket. More after this on 720 WGN. Hey, don't forget about our Get Behind the Mic at WGN Radio contest. Your family and friends could hear your voice on 720 AM. We're giving you an exclusive opportunity to get behind the mic at WGN Radio, thanks to Allstate. You can tour the WGN Radio studios, introduce the news, and have a part in our holiday radio show, A Christmas Carol, on Friday, December 16th. Go to WGNradio.com/contests and enter for your chance to get a taste of what it's like to broadcast. Again, that's WGNradio.com/contests, all sponsored by Allstate, Chicago's own Good Hands. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, as a matter of fact. Joining me is Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer. We have Brandon C. Price, the mastermind behind Vamp, and Dimitri of Demos Pizza over in Wrigleyville and in Wicker Park. Where are you from originally, my friend?
That's a tricky one. I was City.
You were born where?
In Salt Lake City.
Really?
But I grew up in Iowa.
Okay.
So
why don't I know people who are born? I don't know that many people born in Utah. My brother served as a missionary in Utah. I've told you that I was baptized
right,
Mormon.
Right.
You've covered this territory.
Yeah, you're right.
How long do you remember being in Utah? Were you there for?
No. I was only there for about 3 years. Both of my parents, they are. It's kind of. That's the interesting story. I'm not interesting. Salt Lake City, and then I was kind of, you know, whatever.
Salt Lake City is a fascinating place.
Is and it's very gorgeous.
I think
people need to visit there. Very, very. My dad is from Turkey, but is Greek. And lived in New Zealand for most of his life. I know, exactly.
By the way, for those of you watching on WGNRadio.com, you know that I just did a what with my head.
And then my mom's from California. So I think they just, I don't know, they were like, we got to go a little bit more east. And they ended up in Salt Lake City, and they're like, no, farther east. And then they ended up in Iowa. There we go.
Yeah, who says we have to, I mean, I love that, and I'm sorry that you don't remember. So obviously you visited Salt Lake City.
I have been back, but only a couple times because I left when I was three. So
sure.
You know, most
well,
of my childhood.
Go, you know, kind of checking out your old stomping grounds from preschool, like that. You're like, oh, this is where I stopped using my pacifier. So then, where in Iowa?
Ames, Iowa. It's where Iowa State University is. Both my parents are professors there, which is where they got jobs.
Oh, I see now.
And that's exactly.
See, academics don't always have a decision on where they're going to go next. They're stationed places, really.
Very much so. They applied actually for the jobs together, and that was the only university that accepted both of them.
Wow, really?
That's not easy to do.
That was a thing back then. I don't believe it's a thing any longer.
Astronauts do that, I think.
And right? I think FBI agents.
Yeah. Spies.
Spies, maybe. Mm-hmm. Try to be stationed together.
When they put talent on cruise ships, they want couples.
Right.
Because you go crazy in that tiny little room.
All right, then. And smart. I wonder if doctors can do that. See, we can go into all the professions. Well, it's not that easy. As a professor, as an in academia, it is really hard to, one, in the field that you're in, where the job openings are, and then to be placed with the person that you want to, obviously, you're building a life with.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Of course not. But I think they also, at least back then, they recognized that if they don't allow that as an option, like, what do you exactly? It's not easy. Like, what are you going to do? Like,
right.
One person gets a job there, someone gets a job somewhere else. Like, you're kind of screwed.
And what do they teach?
Well, they hate teaching. but
so go to Iowa State University.
Yeah. But they do research, right? That's what they were excited about. Both my parents are, they're very curious. They're passionate about exploring things. My dad is molecular biology. My mom is in botany.
Okay.
So they do. I think my dad is working on renewables in using plants as a renewable energy source.
Okay. And so, and then your mom's in botany.
Yeah. So
similar. Is she growing the plants that your dad's renewing?
That would be so much synchronicity right there.
Too much.
Yeah. She actually, funny enough, she developed a video game to help high school students understand how photosynthesis works. In the video game, you shrink down into the size of a cell and you explore the cell and you get to see all of the interactions that take place inside of a plant cell.
So absorbing the sunlight and creating the chlorophyll. And
she's the Miss Frizzle of Iowa State.
Quite literally, yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
When I was in high school, I was so proud of her. I was like, Mom, you're making a video game. Yeah. Good job.
I love this. Well, you're not like, are you like, as the cell, are you shooting at things? I'm just kidding.
you do shoot light.
Oh.
To make the photosynthesis happen.
Oh my God.
It was pretty impressive.
Elliot, you and I, what are we doing with our time? We're not making video games to teach people.
Although that sounds like a total peyote trip right there. I shrunk to the size of a cell, and I saw photosynthesis, and I shot light beams at it.
Well, don't tell my mom, but it probably started the idea with a peyote trip. She's not listening. It's okay.
That sounds so creative. And so what brought you to Chicago?
I went to school in Wisconsin, in Madison. Mm-hmm. And then I...
And what did you study?
I studied history and biology. I got a little bit of what they gave me.
History and biology?
Yeah, history and biology. You got
it. Was it a double major?
It was a double major, yeah.
Okay, that's a lot of work.
It was, yes. But history was really my passion. You know when you see what your parents do and you're, okay, I guess maybe I should do something related to them.
No, not at all. But go ahead. Okay. My dad was a cab driver. My mom was a computer programmer. I'm like, what else is out there? Yeah.
Well, good for you. Yeah. I, like an idiot, was like, well, I probably should do something. And so I did biology as well.
Okay.
But history is my passion. And
funny of course,
enough,
that's how you get into a pizza joint. No, how do you?
Well, so while I was there in school, I worked at this place. I found this place called Ian's Pizza. And they were based in Madison. Pizza by the Slice, kind of a similar concept. And after working there for about 4 years, they wanted to expand. They wanted to grow. And I thought, hey, you know what? This might be an opportunity. I saw what business could be. In a capitalist society, you can, you know, you can make profit.
But you have no business background.
Zero. But you learn.
But you have a curiosity for it.
Massive,
and
right?
Ability to consume it, because I have a degree in history and I wouldn't even know how to begin a bit. I'm this many years into my career and I still don't know how to work business.
I don't have any degrees and I apparently own a business.
I mean, I wasn't flawless. I made plenty of mistakes. Don't worry. And I still
do. But you have to be fearless. I mean, you have to be fearless to do that.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, there's a fearless or stupid. I don't know which one. Yeah,
let's go with
the
fearless,
same, right?
Right?
I think sometimes
ignorance is bliss. Is that
yeah? That's kind of part of it.
He's kind of reflecting on it. And now you have these two great places in Wrigleyville and Wicker Park.
You got it. Yeah, and I guess it's in a blink of an eye. Yeah, that brought me to Chicago. I wanted to open my own shop, and so that's what I did.
And again, you look around the markets and you go, where can I open a pizza joint? Why didn't I go to the pizza capital of the United States?
Yeah. No. I feel you.
Okay, so the pizzas you brought in, macaroni and cheese. This is amazing. It's got it's like buttery and it's a thin crust. We can hear Brandon chewing on.
Take a step back.
Yeah. By the way, Esmeralda, you have to come down and try some of this pizza.
Yes.
I forgot to tell you that there was going to be more food tonight. I know. I need to give you a heads up.
It's fine.
I hope that Rob can come
all
down,
of it.
Get down here and have some of that. I think Sam Panionovich is somewhere too. Didn't I hear his voice somewhere on the
He's
air?
On the phone.
Oh, well, yeah. Don't worry about Sam.
Tell him there's booze too.
Well, that's in the green room. That's given, it's right? It's the holiday season. It's whiskey and a cookie's coming up later.
And the secret's out.
And that's happening. So, Dimitri, tell people a little bit about your joints. Is it a bar and restaurant? Is it a sports bar? What are they?
Sure. Yeah. No, we are. So they're two different locations. They're two different kind of sort of concepts. They're both pizza by the slice. You can get whole pies, of course, if you want. But the whole idea is you should be able to jump in. There's a huge display, gorgeous display of probably like 20 to 30 different options. You should be able to grab, like, point to the one that you like. It'll get heated up in the oven, out, and you'll be on your way.
Very nice.
I should also mention.
Yes, you should.
Let
tell
me
us.
Not forget.
No.
That the location in Wicker Park also has a liquor license, so we do a whole bunch of craft beer and cocktails as well. I think the people in Wrigley have enough booze, so we have not yet ventured in that direction yet.
Right. They had stopped there for
Timo's
their slice.
Is where you go after you're done after drinking.
Yes.
Now, mm-hmm. Now, when you were working there, it was Ian's?
It was both. So I was a delivery driver for Ian's and a front of house. They weren't called managers.
Yeah, slinger.
It's something. So like the second level or whatever. Eventually, all the burns on my hands speak to that. And then when it became Demos, I think I may have done everything there. I think because I cooked and then I was a manager and then we moved to I got to be a part of opening Wicker Park, which was excellent. And I learned. I didn't know at the time I was learning so much, but you know, 2 years later. Most of what I do running our business is straight up from sitting in meetings with this guy. So it was really fun, and I still do believe I could get back there and make a pizza faster than I mean, dude, you remember 3 St. Patrick's days ago when I set the record for a number of dough cases in an hour. Like it was
nice.
I don't remember the number, but I remember no one's ever it was absolute DiMaggio levels of untouchable.
I wish people could see that reaction.
Yeah, Elliot's in is mid bite, and Dimitri, you were telling me about a festival that's coming up in January.
Oh yeah, so let me back it up just a second. You mentioned yes, we were Ian's, and then we turned into Demos. The story on that is that the Ian's decided that they wanted to turn into a franchise, and we had been existing and been independent for like the 3 years that we'd been here, and we really wanted to stay that way, so we declined. But of course, if we're not going to join the franchise, we can't really keep the name, so we changed to Demos. So yes,
which is a nickname for Dimitri, or
it was an old nickname that I had, which has died very poorly, unfortunately. Dimitri today.
Yes, if you name your restaurant after a nickname that you're trying to let die.
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, I definitely make mistakes. If I rewind, I would change that.
Esmeralda, that would be like my opening a restaurant and calling it Patsy's. Which is a name. I know. Yeah, I was Patsy.
Patty Vasquez's.
Oh God. Vasquez.
I think we'll always be Demo and BP to each other.
That's true. Some things never die.
I like that. So tell us about this festival.
Oh yeah. So this is why the reason I backed up a second is because the irony of this festival is it's called Ian's Party, which is hysterical, obviously, as you can understand. But it is a it's like a local music festival put on in Wicker Park at Double Door, at Chop Shop, at the Flatiron, and
that place.
That
one place that you all know that is happening
right there. The Subterranean.
That's my way of helping you get there.
Yeah. It's all good. You did great.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciated. And it is there's 70 different bands, 350 different people. It's going to be January 6th, 7th, and 8th. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now we're competing with Sketchfest.
No, it's before Sketchfest.
No, it's not. My show is on January 6th.
Is it really?
It really is.
This is my first year. I'm not involved, so I'm just happy about it.
Can I just tell you that I didn't know that was happening, and I'm coming back from Disney World that day?
We are. I'll tell you a lot of stuff. We're so on the air right now.
I thought that we were starting later. So this is January 6th, 7th, and 8th.
You got
in
it.
In Wicker Park. It's Ian's Fest.
It's called Ian's Party. Yep. And we're sponsoring along with Half Acre.
Oh, wonderful.
We're going to provide all the pizza for all of the...
How many bands?
70.
70 bands.
From all across. Mostly, I should... No, no, no. Almost entirely from Chicago, but they've pulled a few acts from all over, like maybe like 5 or 10 or so.
Well, come back the week after Christmas and let's talk about this. Maybe
I'd love
to. Maybe get one of those bands in.
That'd be great.
Can you contact one of the bands that's in the fest?
Very easily.
And maybe we'll have them on a Monday night.
Would love to.
I think that works out very well. Elliot, how's that pizza?
It's good. Really good. Hey, is Ian going to be at the party?
shall I invite him?
Yeah. Well, let's not make it awkward. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. It is Wednesday, December 7th, and in 1941, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and the United States was brought into World War II. Many people in the United States did not want to be involved in global affairs, but the entire military is now reflective of the battles that we fought during 1941, during World War II. Here's the thing is that where we are as a country really reflects the sacrifices made by men and women, by the people who were killed. Over 2,000 men and women died during Pearl Harbor. And we want to make sure that not just on Veterans Day, not just on Memorial Day, but throughout the year, our veterans are supported, remembered, recognized, and receive the services and support that they deserve. On the line with us is Victor LeGrun, who is the director of the Chicago Office of Veterans Affairs. He is also a U.S. Army veteran. And we thank you so much for joining us. Hi, Victor. How you doing?
Hey, good evening. How are you?
Very well. I know that this is an office that was created by Mayor Emanuel in 2013, and it is crucial. I think that, you know, we do pay homage to our veterans on those holidays, but every single day a veteran is in need of a service, and perhaps it's as simple as you know, communicating with somebody else, finding some support, talking to somebody else who's had experiences similar to theirs, and there are veterans every day who are committing suicide. So you have a wide range of services that help our veterans, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, we're a city, many people will tell you, you know, we're a city with big shoulders, with a very deep and rich history about the military. Between Soldier Field and Navy Pier, you know, those are the broad shoulders of this city. And as you can always imagine, you know, we're a city that has a rich history of military service and sports. So we've always answered the call whenever the nation has needed us the most, and it's been a great pleasure for me to represent the great veterans of the city of Chicago.
And how can people find out more? If they have someone in their community, maybe it's a relative or a neighbor who they know is struggling, because part of being a veteran is also feeling independent, feeling like, you know, I can do this on my own. I've been trained. I am tough. I'm strong. I can weather these rough waters. Is it likely that a veteran won't reach out for the help they need?
You know, sometimes you'll find that we have veterans who do reach out for help and just don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. And in other instances, we'll find out that veterans are just disconnected, if you will, from where the resources are. So one of the things we've really worked on in the city is ensuring that we have better continuity to resources. And what I mean by that is we have a streamlined process. So if someone's looking for housing, for example, and you went to the veterans website that the city provides, under the category of housing, you will see all the organizations that we work with and agencies that assist veterans, whether it's helping people who are in need of using their GI Bill or their VA homeowner loan, or if there's someone who's in need of transitional housing or immediate emergency housing or even a warming station like cold nights like tonight. So we've been working closely. The good folks at Department of Family and Support Services are working around the clock every day to ensure that we have somewhere safe for our veterans to put a roof over their heads, some warmth on their bodies, and some food in their stomachs.
And the endeavors you have toward mentoring veterans in order to strengthen the next generation of leaders and social entrepreneurs, you know, we really have such a wealth of resources when it comes to the men and women who have served in the military. The training they've received can really translate so much into the business world, into what is, you know, part of the American working culture, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look back at, for example, the best example to look at would be the World War II population. When those veterans came back, they actually built this nation to what it is today.
Right.
That was where we saw the industrialized boom, the growth of suburban areas in our cities. We saw that manufacturing went to a level that we hadn't seen in the history of our nation. And because of that, we became a very strong, rich, and competitive nation. So today, when we see post 9/11 veterans coming back, they're using that ingenuity. They're using that level of intelligence, the investment that the Department of Defense makes in our personnel to get them trained up to go out here and not only serve our nation in war, but also ensure that we have the top level of intelligence. We have the top level of technology, and we're being innovative in a number of ways. So we have a population of veterans today that are coming back, taking on opportunities both academically and professionally. They're leading corporations and companies and private sector as well. And you'll see them also in philanthropic organizations and nonprofits. So we're really proud of the talent level that we have here in Chicago and the opportunities that they're taking advantage of.
And what can Chicagoans do to make sure that veterans are receiving the services and support that they need?
One of the best things that I remind people that they can do to help is to be a connector. If you know that there's a veteran in your congregation, if you know that there's a veteran in your community or your neighborhood or in your family, and they're looking like they're struggling or they're in need of something and there's some level of frustration, help them connect to the resources necessity. I mean, the resources that they're needing. Often enough, you can just go to the internet and Google City of Chicago Veterans. It'll bring you right to the veterans webpage, and you'll see a number of organizations that we work with who partner with the city, our good faith organizations who are helping to take care of veterans every day. And many of the veterans today who are in need of some help, they're in need of that one extra thing, that piece of hurdle help to help them be stable, help them move into a career pathway, help them have stable housing and employment opportunities. And those are the things that really enrich our community after every single day and when these folks are coming back and looking for a new way to serve in Chicago.
Victor, can I ask a little bit about your history? Because I'm curious about where are you from originally?
So I'm originally from Washington, D.C.
Oh.
Yes, believe it or not. So I'm a transplant myself. Quite often, especially over the last 8 years, we've seen that Chicagoans have been in D.C., but I was on the other side. So I came from from D.C. And after I left the military, I moved to Chicago. I was recruited by a geneticist, as a matter of fact, to help him build some community-based strategies at the University of Chicago. And after working in academia for 8 years, I came over to the mayor's office to serve as the appointee for the Office of Veterans Affairs.
And tell us a little bit about the difference that having grown up in Washington, D.C. and the pace in Chicago, because really, obviously, such starkly different towns.
Oh, absolutely. So both cities have similarities in that politics is in everything.
Sure.
In every facet of the city, right? Mm-hmm. One because of city government and the other because it's the nation's capital. But what you'll also find in both cities is that you see high-level talent coming in, figuring out a way, wanting to learn how to make a huge impact. So you see a lot of hardworking people who have that grit and have that opportunity to take advantage of the education system. Chicago itself, it's a very vast city, right? And I think people lose sight of how big our city is because we're very community and neighborhood-centric. And D.C. is more of a big city feel, but geographically not a very large city. It doesn't have a big footprint. So the difference is the size of the two cities, They're both very heavily populated cities, but you'll find, you know, Chicago is one of those great cities that has something to do every weekend that's in a different community. So you'll learn all the different flavors of the city, whether you're in Pilsen or Humboldt Park or Chinatown or, you know, in Greektown. No matter where you are, there's something great you love to eat, some new festival you love to attend. It's really that type of city. Whereas in D.C., there's a Smithsonian for everything that you can think of, right? And there's so many natural things that I've had the opportunity, you know, the reflecting pool and going to Arlington Cemetery and going to the monument in the Capitol.
Oh, and at the Pentagon. I mean, that's one of the most amazing monuments I've ever seen to 9/11.
You know, and those are places you can go. You can get a free tour as a citizen and sign up, and you really get to kind of take part in history in a very different way. So, you know, D.C. is that nation's capital, enriched history that you'll see, that you learn as a kid, and you say, man, like, this is where George Washington was, right? And that's an amazing thing. But also in Chicago, you know, you go to Soldier Field, you think back about what it was founded for and the folks who served and sacrificed and bled for this nation. And today you see this monument, if you will, that is the stadium that is built in their names. And that's a remarkable thing also.
Well, and having mentioned the history and the respect that we pay to our veterans, today is Pearl Harbor Day. In the history of the military, there are obviously these moments in time that change us forever. And I would say that Pearl Harbor, obviously being one of the greatest ones in the United States history, one of the most tragic. How do you reflect on a day like Pearl Harbor?
You know, we look back on pivotal days like D-Day, for example. And Pearl Harbor is one of those days that we always look back and reflect as Americans, because it's a turning point for us as a nation, right? After being attacked and losing roughly 2,400 people and, you know, 20 American ships, if you can imagine this, 300 aircraft, it was such a heavy toll for us as a nation. But you also recognize that as a nation, those are the moments that galvanize us, that bring us together, that allow us to dig deep as Americans and say, today we all are Americans. We all are affected by this. And Pearl Harbor, for our younger listeners, was that 9/11 moment in 1941.
Indeed.
Right? Mm-hmm. So when we as a nation, you know, were attacked, we recognized that as a nation we needed to stand up. We needed to get behind our leadership. We needed to understand that as a nation moving forward, going to war, everything was going to change for everyone, but we were going to get through this together. And that's what great leadership did for us as a nation at that time. And even after 9/11, when we as a nation were paralyzed, if you will, for a second.
Oh, no doubt.
Because we didn't know what was going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Pentagon had been attacked. The World Trade Center, a plane had crashed in Pennsylvania. We saw all of these situations and we said, okay, what do we do? And leadership stood up and brought us together as a nation and said, we will take action. But more than take action, we will protect our people and we will move forward and we will change, you know, because life has changed so much since 9/11. But it has also brought us together in some ways. So, you know, we're really hopeful. And as I talk to military personnel and veterans around the country, especially locally, they're all looking again to see how we can be brought together, how we can be a nation of one once again.
Right.
So, you know, these are pivotal moments in our time and in our history. I think we all have those times, and every generation has had that call, whether it was Desert Storm or whether it was Vietnam. You know, every time we've gone to war, and it hasn't always been a popular thing, but we have had that resiliency to not only come together, but figure out a way to move forward. So I think 1941 is always going to be a time, you know, and it's been 75 years. I think back to my great uncle who served in the Navy during World War II, and right at a time where the Navy had finally integrated. And, you know, he would always say that there were only a few jobs that he could take when he enlisted in the Navy.
Right.
But it was an opportunity for him to serve. And it was something that he treasured. You know, and my grandfather, he served in the Army, so it was different for him because the Army was the first branch to integrate. So we really think about how our nation has grown and has changed and has evolved. And today we see more women in roles in the military than ever before. So we always think about the distance traveled And things have changed, but things have also gotten better. So we want to certainly see that continue as well.
Well, we want to see things get better for our veterans. And I appreciate all the work that you do with the Chicago Office of Veterans Affairs. And on behalf of all of our listeners, I want to thank you and all the men and women that you help serve, that have served our country, taking on a job, whatever their reason for their call to duty, a job that most of us can't or won't do. So thank you for everything that you do. And please let us know if there's anything we can do, anything you want to call attention to, any programs or services you want to make sure that veterans should be aware of and how people can help. Please, our door is always open to you.
Absolutely. You know, I really appreciate this opportunity to serve, and that's exactly what it is, a service. You know, Mayor Emanuel has been an amazing leader in his advocacy for veterans and for military families. He's always ensuring that anyone that comes into this space that wants to do something for our veterans are a good player in this space. You know, whether he's advocating with the Secretary of the VA in D.C. or he's talking to the President about additional resources, I can't begin to say, you know, this isn't something that people see. But this is something that's on his mind every day. He wants to make sure that we're doing the things that we can do as a city to make sure that people live vibrant lives and ensure that we can also be an attractive place for military talent to want to come and stay and contribute to our city. So I appreciate everything you guys do on the radio. I really do. And I really thank you and value you for telling our story.
Oh, and we will continue to do so. And I appreciate having you as a friend of the show. Again, we've talked to Victor LeGrun, who is a director of Chicago Office of Veterans Affairs. And as he mentioned, this is something that is important to Mayor Emanuel. He actually created this office in 2013 and has put Victor in charge of that. And we really, everyone owes a debt of gratitude to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it.
We look forward to talking to you again. Have a wonderful holiday. Merry Christmas, sir.
You too as well.
Have a great one. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. I want to again thank Victor LeGrun from the Chicago Office of Veterans Affairs. That's a lot of work. And you know, when you see people who are struggling and having a hard time, it's easy to go, oh, well, you know, someone will take care of them, or there's got to be some programs for them. Listen to the warning signs. Pay attention to the people around you. I have a lot of friends now since working with the Marines who I am always impressed and just blown away by their just level of commitment, because it's something I thought about doing. Did you ever think about joining the military, Brandon?
A lot of my friends did. Yeah. I was so not cool at 18, 19, like just in all the ways you can be not cool as a human being and a bad person, that I was never that way. But my father and his two brothers and it runs in my family. One of my best friends is just got out of the Marines. I have a ton of respect for. I don't know if I've got the chops.
I don't know.
I'm a pretty cool guy, but I don't know if I've got, you know, I mean, what it takes is just so incredible. And
yeah.
And Dimitri and I were just talking off the air, like, what do we have to do as a country, not only to obviously in 800 different ways take better care of our veterans, but honor their training and their expertise?
Yeah.
Like you see people with, you know, double majors and bachelor's and master's degrees and all these kinds of things, and they don't have half the leadership or the commitment or the ability to just keep working. You know, the work ethic, I guess, would be that term exactly, that you see some of these people coming out of the armed services do. And yet they, you know, obviously, I'm sorry, they were busy serving your country while I was getting my communications degree, you know, which is a lie. I don't have a degree. But you know, and it's just like, what do we have to do to make companies, make these hiring firms, like all these things understand what the skills that these people take on?
Oh, no doubt about it. The leadership, and just even the showing up part, because there are so many people that just don't show up, whether it's actually in the physical showing up or in the practical doing the work, getting things done. We need to take a break here. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. I'm in the Allstate Showcase studio, and today is December 7th. 1941 was the year that Pearl Harbor was attacked. An armada of 354 Japanese warplanes, supported by aircraft carriers, destroyers, and midget submarines, launched a surprise attack on the United States, killing 2,403 people and forcing the United States into the Second World War. On the phone with us right now is Craig Nelson, who is the author of Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness, and his book delivers all the terror, chaos, violence, tragedy, and heroism of that day. Hi, Craig. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. I'm on hour 19 of the Pearl Harbor Marathon interview, so you are my finale, and I'm glad to have it with you.
Oh, well, I almost wish I knew what they had already asked you. Is there something, as you said, all the hours that you've been talking about this, is there something that hasn't come up? Because I know that people kind of have an idea. They've seen the movie. You know, we're getting so far away from it now. We're losing our veterans who served in World War II every single day. Is there something you haven't covered today that you would like people to know?
Well, I guess what people should really know is for all this gossip about Franklin Roosevelt and about who knew what where,
Yes. There
were only two actual warnings about Pearl Harbor that specifically said Hawaii is going to be attacked. And the first one happened almost a year ahead of time in January 1941, when the ambassador of Peru to Japan told the ambassador of the United States to Japan that he had heard from multiple sources that if the relationship between Tokyo and Washington goes south, then Tokyo was going to attack Pearl Harbor. And the reason why this is so interesting is that a lot of Peruvians at that time worked in Japan as cleaners and maids and nannies and gardeners and this kind of service personnel. So it's very possible that multiple sources went from the Navy to the Peruvian embassy and they knew what they were talking about. But of course, everyone in America ignored that warning because who believes anything an ambassador tells you, right? But the other great warning happened in August 1941 when a character named Dusan Popov, who was a triple agent, he worked simultaneously for the intelligence agencies of the Yugoslavs, the British, and the Nazis, appeared at the FBI headquarters.
I'm gasping because I had not heard about Popov. Carry on.
Well, Popov was such a character. He was very good looking. He was a real ladies' man. He's one of the major figures that Ian Fleming used to create James Bond.
Right.
And Popov appears at J. Edgar Hoover's office and tells him that he has a terrible warning to give him, that he's been hired by the Nazis to assess American defense capabilities. And of the 3-page questionnaire he's been given to fill out, a full third of it is about Pearl Harbor. But J. Edgar Hoover does not believe him because he doesn't think he can trust a triple agent, and he knows that Popov is having an affair with the married French superstar Simone Simon, who you know from the movie Cat People. So he doesn't believe it and will not pass on the warning. And those are the only two clear-cut warnings we received about Pearl Harbor.
Well, when you say that people talk about whether or not the United States knew, whether or not Roosevelt knew, you know, people have these theories that Franklin Roosevelt wanted to bring the United States into World War II because, you know, we were isolationists. We were trying to take care of our own, you know, situation, which was trying to come out of the Great Depression. Are those the kind of rumors that you say that you're alluding to that people have?
Exactly. And all of those rumors were begun by Roosevelt's sworn enemies. It was begun in 1944 by a guy who helped found the America First Committee, which you'll remember as the super isolationist, super right-wing committee that Charles Lindbergh joined and made a lot of anti-Semitic comments about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was amplified by Husband Kimmel was the head of the fleet in Hawaii. One of his lawyers, during one of the congressional investigations, then amplified this idea that Roosevelt knew and was involved and that it happened. And then the third person to pick it up was someone who was trying to take all the blame off the Navy and place it on the Australian government. So these three people sort of colluded to tarnish Roosevelt, who was dead and couldn't defend himself.
Well, why would the Navy want to take some blame off of themselves? It was a surprise attack. Was the assumption that they should have known or been better prepared?
Yeah, the Navy cracked. The Navy messed up big time. They're charged with protecting the United States. They did not. Husband Kimmel was supposed to protect the United States soil with his 43,000 servicemen at Pearl Harbor. He did not. So, yes, it was a horrible stain on the service, and the people who wanted to look for someone to scapegoat it on wanted to pin it on civilians. Let me just explain to you one way to understand this point.
Please.
And that is that Husband Kimmel and Hawaii received 56 pages of warnings from Washington about Japan. He then received more warnings from his own staff, one of which said that the Japanese would send aircraft carriers from the north arriving at dawn, which is exactly what happened. He then received further warnings from British intelligence in the Pacific in Asia telling him Japan was on the loose. He said he was told he should put up torpedo nets around his battleships. And he said, I don't need to because torpedoes won't work in the shallow water of Pearl Harbor. Then the British attacked the Italians at Taranto in waters exactly as shallow as Pearl Harbor, which he knew about, and he still did nothing. And finally,
wow.
It was a war warning, which meant he was supposed to lift anchor and set sail, and he was supposed to increase surveillance, and he did nothing. And so the conspiracy theory is that Roosevelt deliberately withheld three or four additional warnings from Kimmel. And if Kimmel had had those three or four additional warnings out of the 80 he'd already gotten, then things would be different. That's how absurd that theory is.
Well, so was Kimmel the one that wanted the United States to be in war with the world?
Well, Kimmel was so had such a racist attitude about the Japanese that it couldn't occur to him that they were capable of doing this.
Wow.
And he was sort of like this stuck-in-the-past kind of person. He thought that war would be declared and that he would send his battleships out, and he and the Japanese would have a big battle on the high seas, and whoever had the biggest battleships in the best position would win the war. And that's what was going to happen. And he couldn't imagine that they could send aircraft carriers and they would have all these warplanes and they would show up in the middle of the night and they would cross the Pacific undetected and they would use state-of-the-art torpedoes and bombs and have all this technology that, frankly, America didn't even have yet.
Well, can you explain to our audience, too, for some people, again, who maybe have learned this, you know, in the background, maybe in high school and watching movies, what was Japan's goal in attacking the United States at Pearl Harbor?
Beginning in January 1941, Japan planned the most audacious military takeover and invasion in world history. They were going to take over all of Southeast Asia from Siberia in the north to what's now Pakistan in the west, and they would control every single thing in between, except for they didn't succeed at Thailand, but they took over all of Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Malaysia, Indonesia, all of coastal China. They already had Korea, so they had every single thing stretching along that coastline, and it took them 6 months to do it, and they did it. And the only opposing force that stood in their way was the American fleet at Pearl Harbor. So that was a very sideline battle for them. They wanted to take out that fleet so it couldn't interfere with their conquest plans. But also, there was a crazy idea underlying all this where Isoroku Yamamoto, the admiral who planned Pearl Harbor, did it because he thought if he devastated the Americans in Hawaii, the American citizen would say, oh, we give up. You can have Asia. You're obviously too powerful for us to fight. We'll just let you have what you want in Asia. And that was his strategy. And, of course, we know what happened. And he knew Americans very well. He learned English by reading biographies of his great hero, Abraham Lincoln. So it's strange that he came up with this crazy idea because, as we all know, Americans love justice.
And, well, yes, I think that that's definitely something where, you know, Americans were obviously immediately sort of rallied into this need to wreak vengeance.
Yes, we've tracked down every single aircraft carrier that took part in the attack on Pearl Harbor and sank all of them. And then when we captured Yamamoto's flags, we assassinated him in the air. We tracked down him traveling in the South Pacific, and he was killed by American airmen. And then when we captured his flagship, we towed it out to Bikini Island and used it for target practice for hydrogen bombs. We really didn't know how to do vengeance.
Yeah, vengeance. I know thy name. But now is this quote his? He's the one that Yamamoto said, I fear all we have done is to awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with a terrible resolve. That seems to have been the case.
Well, this is a fantastic story about that quote because, of course, that quote is everywhere on the internet. You can see it, quote it 1,000 times, or I put it in my book. And then I needed to track down exactly where this came from and when he said it. And I finally tracked it down to, it's a made-up line from the movie Tora Tora Tora. He never actually said that. And it took me 3 days to figure out that's what happened.
Oh, that it was a screenwriter. Great. What a great line from that screenwriter that we all now attribute to Yamamoto.
Good job, screenwriter.
that's remarkable, because what you were just saying about, you know, wanting to destroy the United States military and thinking we wouldn't do anything, basically roll over and let Japan do whatever they wanted. I was thinking this quote doesn't sound like that guy. So it turns out
it's pretty close. It's pretty close, because he would swing back and forth. He was, and in fact, all of the Japanese were like this. They were constantly swinging back and forth between knowing that they couldn't possibly win a war with America and knowing that they must wage war with America. It was almost like some kind of a bipolar disorder with them. And you could see it with everybody. Even the most crazy militarist like Tojo would swing back and forth in trying to decide what to do. And we have all of the documents that are in the book, Pearl Harbor from Invermere, to show exactly this happening over time. So it's very thrilling and intense to watch the entire Japanese government swing back and forth. Are we going to do it? Are we not going to do it? And they could have canceled until the very last minute. They had it open to cancel until December 5th.
Wow, we are talking to author Craig Nelson, who's written Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness. Can you hold on and do another segment with us? I know that we're the grand finale of your record-breaking day.
I'm awake.
More after this on 720 WGN. I want people to understand how important Pearl Harbor is and remembering it, understanding its place in history. And on the line with us right now is author Craig Nelson, who has written Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness. And Craig, I was reading part of your bio that the America we live in today was not born on July 4th, 1776, but in fact, on December 7th, 1941. Why is that? What would you tell people about the significance, the magnitude of what happened at Pearl Harbor?
Well, it's really amazing, because that's the whole reason I wrote this book. Because I think if you look at modern-day America on the stage, and I don't mean apple pie and brownies a la mode America, I'm talking about at the way we appear in public, in real life, on the world stage, that we're the number one superpower, that we have the biggest military by far, that we have the most powerful weapons, that we have the most extensive State Department and foreign aid program, that we help build things like the United Nations and the World Trade Organization to settle differences amicably, and that we did all, and that we rebuilt Germany and Japan, who are our enemies, back up into viable societies and two of our biggest allies. All of that sprang from Pearl Harbor. And all of that was really had one goal, which was to keep World War III from happening. And they have succeeded in doing that for 70 years. And I think that's really the Pearl Harbor legacy. And if you look at that, none of that is from, you know, July 4th. All of it's from December 7th.
And is it also our role as kind of police keepers in the world is that in part to fend off World War III?
Absolutely. That's the key thing that we're trying to do. And, you know, people will say, well, why should America be the police? And it's because when other countries have done it, they did a really bad job. You know, for anyone right. who wants to complain about what America does as a superpower, I say, oh, yeah, why don't you go ask the Indians what they thought of the British?
Right.
Why don't you go ask the Africans what they thought of the Portuguese? Why don't you ask the Jews what they thought of the Germans? You know, as the number one superpower, we may not be completely blameless and completely criticism-free, but we're a lot better than anybody else who's had this job, frankly.
Have you seen anything in the last, you know, few decades as you write the books that you have put together? And again, I'm so glad that you've written this book, Pearl Harbor, from Infamy to Greatness. A lot of stories I don't think people are familiar with. But as a historian, also, you know, your job is to kind of put in perspective. The reason it's so important is to understand how, you know, that happened then, now affects us. But also sort of the warning signs of, hey, everyone pay attention. You know, we're moving in a direction that perhaps is reflective of some mistakes that we've made in the past.
Well, one thing that I really took from the lesson of both 9/11 and Pearl Harbor, and, you know, we're talking about, you know, both the Japanese and Bin Laden, in both cases, were sort of psychotic, and they were war criminals, and they were doing horrible things. I'm not saying this as a defense of any of their behavior. I'm saying that it's something the United States could learn from both of those tragedies, is that we're very rich and we're very powerful, and we can afford to be a little bit gracious with people who aren't that way. And part of the thing that's amazing to read in the Pearl Harbor history is how our Secretary of State, Kodo Ho, is continually bullying the Japanese ambassadors and just treating them like dirt. And at one point, one of them says, well, the only reason we signed the tripartite treaty is because we thought we needed to have some friends somewhere.
Wow.
It's just sort of sad to hear what they say. And then at another point, one of the prime ministers says, please tell Mr. Roosevelt to imagine what it's like to be poor in natural resources instead of the richest country on the planet like you are. You know, I mean, it's not quite that, but it's also, so I just think that we could be more gracious in our dealings with the poor and the weak and the scared. We can afford to do that. And we can have a lot more peaceful vibes going around, you know. I mean, every time our military does something humanitarian, we shouldn't think of it as a waste of our money. We should think of it that we have 800 military bases around the world. I want any of your listeners to imagine what it would be like to have a huge foreign government's military base in your neighborhood. Right? There would be raw messages going out. You know, things
sure.
would happen. There would be conflict. So every time our military does a big humanitarian thing, I think that erases so much ill will that just naturally builds up in conflict. It builds up friction. It builds up, that's the word I was going for.
Right.
It builds up having all these bases.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the presence of military means that something could go wrong, and it also has, as you said, the vibe of conflict. So I agree. We should definitely see that as building, you know, a future for everybody rather than a waste.
Right.
That's accurate. Yes. I did not realize, again, I told you before we came on the air that I have a degree in history, which means I know a little bit about a lot of things, but nothing specific about one thing. And I didn't realize Franklin Roosevelt's role in World War I. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Oh, this was actually one of our great finds in research. I was so happy to get this. We came across a picture, and no previous Pearl Harbor book has found this because they didn't realize. Let me explain the story. So we found a picture in 1914 during the Woodrow Wilson era of president when Franklin Roosevelt was Assistant Secretary of the Navy. And he loved his job so much, and he just loved the United States. He probably loved the United States Navy more than he loved any single human being. And you see him at the Brooklyn Navy Yard at the laying of the Kiel, which is the official berth of ship number 39, which turns out to be the USS Arizona. And no one previously had tied together that ship 39 was the Arizona. So you get to see him, and it's 7 years before he gets polio. So he's still standing. He's holding the hand of the son of one of the ship's captains. And he's beaming with pride because Roosevelt just was crazy about the Navy from this gig as being assistant secretary. So when he was president, he's going to raise the Navy's budget every year across the Depression. He's going to have morning meetings lying in bed in his blue Navy cloak surrounded by his naval memorabilia. And he's going to call the Navy us and the Army them until General Marshall makes him cut it out. So you can see this entire wonderful story going on right in this one picture.
Oh, that is incredible. You have several stories that I had never heard. That and that the there was a teenager who shot down a warplane. Is that right? A bomber?
Oh, they tried. I don't think he actually did. There a number of them were teenagers, actually, so maybe you're right. But the story I think you're thinking of is that a teenager tried to bring down a warplane by throwing a wrench at it. So this is how pathetic the situation was there. The Kimball had left only one boiler lit on many of the warships, which means the big guns didn't have any electricity. And even the smaller guns didn't have any electricity, so they couldn't maneuver them. So they were just sitting there, like, defenseless. And they had these little squirrel rifles called Springfields from 1903. That was the big weapon the Americans had at the time. And so there's one moment where a little... And, oh, And then the average age of the kids on Oahu, of the 43,000 servicemen on Oahu, is 19.
Right.
But the average age of the guys at Pearl Harbor and at the airfields that were destroyed by the Japanese Armada is much younger, because all of the senior officers lived in houses and apartments on nice dry land. They didn't live on the ships, and they didn't live on the airstrips in the barracks. Those were only the kids. So I think the average age of Pearl Harbor, and that's why we still got 2,000 alive, is because they were all like 16, 17, 18 years old.
Wow.
So they weren't like 40-year-old Ben Affleck. They were like, if anyone knows the Leave It to Beaver show, they were like Tony Dow. You know, really.
Wow.
They were these skinny little kids. And there's some real sad stories, too. Like a 16-year-old goes up to a commander and goes, you've got to make this stop. You've got to stop this.
Aww.
And the attack.
Yeah, thinking it was that easy. Obviously, they were under constant attack. I had heard that there were the destroyers were out at sea. They were not at Pearl Harbor. Is that right?
You mean the aircraft carriers?
The aircraft carriers.
Two of them were delivering planes to a Marine stationed on Wake and Guam, and one of them was on the West Coast being spruced up.
Well, and
that's why they were away.
And that had, at least we had the two carriers, because that was significant going forward and having to rebuild the Navy.
Yeah. And the other good luck was that they missed the dry docks and they missed the tank farm. All of the petroleum for the Navy and Army had to be tanked over from the West Coast and stored in tank farms on Hawaii. And the Japanese missed those two things. And the Pacific Theater would have been delayed by like a year if they had taken out those two things, too.
What would you say, and before I let you go, what would you say as far as how our military is regarded now? Because you said that in your book that the consequences obviously continue to resonate. In addition to, being peacekeepers around the world and the world's police, what would you say the impact was of Pearl Harbor on enlistment, on the what it meant to be a serviceman or woman?
Well, it immediately turned the country onto a war footing. And the isolationist feeling that it had been taken over was completely replaced from scratch. And everyone wanted vengeance. They couldn't wait to take revenge. And they sort of, actually, Washington was sort of a master at mixing together the Nazis and the Japanese into sort of one menace. So that we were the arsenal of democracy, we were keeping the world safe for democracy, we were stamping out global totalitarianism. And they did a sort of brilliant job of creating a unified enemy from those two groups that really had nothing in common. So it was a brilliant sort of strategy of PR in a certain way. But what I think is fantastic is that our military today is as well-trained and well-armed and sophisticated as any military ever. And I think our only thing that we have to really look out for is that we have a very big footprint and we need to sort of step lightly. And I guess that was the lesson that came up to me from Pearl Harbor and 9/11.
And, as we mentioned earlier, it's important to remember these lessons in order to, know, at least be informed. We're going to make mistakes. That's goes without saying, but it is important to remember these things. And I want to thank Craig Nelson, who's the author of Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness. And of course, we not only survived, but thrived after World War II. And we need to continue to remember that the men and women who served in World War II and since really have an impact on people around the world. And Craig, thank you so much. What other books would you, I know that you've written quite a bit. I'm looking at this list here. You've written for Vanity Fair, The Wall Street Journal, Soldier of Fortune, Salon, National Geographic. People can find you everywhere. So my guess is just Google you.
Yeah. Well, I have a website called craignelson.us, and there's free excerpts and reviews and essays and pieces and a video of me talking and all this stuff on there, and that can lead you to buying any of my books. So craignelson.us has all this stuff about me.
Well, we look forward to having you back on the show. You are a fountain of information. Oh, wonderful. And hopefully
a great time.
Oh, thank you. Hopefully it's not after a marathon of interviews. But we are so grateful for your time, and I know it's been a busy day. Thank you. Have a great holiday season.
Merry Christmas, Chicago. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas, Craig. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It is definitely Christmas time, so I kind of feel like I'm having a holiday party every night until Christmas. I'm leaving on Friday, so I'm getting in some friend time with Elliot Serrano. We're doing Whiskey and a Cookie in just a little bit. How are you doing, Elliot?
I'm doing well. I'm gonna have to make a confession. I went to the green room and I opened the
Milanos.
Milanos.
You already opened the cookies?
Yeah.
We only had pizza. We have pizza from Demos, and you went for cookies already.
Well,
we have mac and cheese pizza.
I had that.
I know.
Did you eat the cookie in the green room and then came back into the studio and like not said a word?
Yeah, that's what's happening right now.
Wow. Went in for like 10 minutes.
Jeez.
Yeah, he was. Start with a cookie, end with dinner.
Yeah. That's right. You know what? Life's too short. Eat dessert first.
I'm an adult. I can do that.
Yes, you can. Brandon C. Price joins us in studio. He is the mastermind behind Vamp, a music, comedy, and drinking show. Friday and Saturday nights at 10:30, but this season for the holidays, they have Unwrapped on Thursday nights. You can go to vampchicago.com for more information. And it's BYOB. And there's a great liquor store right down the street, although tight security at that liquor store.
But they just redid it. They did the 1,000 liquors in Big City, totally redone, totally remodeled.
So the security guard is nicer?
No,
oh,
not at all.
As he shouldn't be.
He wasn't remodeled.
I mean, like, think about
he was not remodeled.
you got to be tough.
You just definitely do. And we have Dimitri from Demo's Pizza in Wrigleyville and Wicker Park. And what are your plans for New Year's Eve? We were talking about that off the air for a moment.
Ooh, that's a great question. And if I had a good answer, I'd give it to you. But I have no idea.
You're probably working, aren't you? Yeah. You're going to be serving up slices all night long, including this mac and cheese slice, which is ridiculous.
All night long.
Oh, come on, Kevin. Some barbecue chicken and bacon over here.
Sure,
ranch.
That's what I'm talking about right there. I need to raise my sodium levels.
And Kevin Naughton, who is the host of Snapshots, coming up this Monday, December
12th.
12th.
Yeah, 8:30.
I'm sorry I won't be there. It's my first one I'm missing in a while.
I know, and we're going to miss you. So.
And you, you're here once a month on Wednesdays, and you know that at the end of every show we do Tell Me Something Good. You came in guns blazing saying, I've got something to tell you.
You say, hey, give me something good before we go off the air. So last time I told my brother drives a truck and he's driving all over the place, and I really appreciated him listening, so I told him I loved him on the air.
Yeah.
And instead of just letting it go, he said to me, hey, you're creeping me out. So I take it back. I hate your guts. Keep driving and be safe.
Oh.
Knucklehead.
That works. Does it creep you out? Elliot, you have three brothers, right?
Yeah, and it's funny that you should say that whenever we say I love you to each other, the response is almost inevitably a variation of stop it, you're creeping me out.
Really?
Yeah, can't help it.
Dimitri, do you have siblings?
I have two sisters, and when I tell them that I love them, they say I love you too.
And
as
you have
well
sisters.
Do my two sisters.
Yeah. Yes.
I think like uncles and male cousins mostly in the South just kind of go, yeah, no, okay.
Bennett, you have siblings. Do you tell your siblings that you love them?
Yeah, of course.
And do they get creeped out?
They give the regular response that you would think. I love you.
It's
back.
All about the
By the way, your
too,
response
right?
is a little bit creepy right there.
Ah.
They give the regular response.
I love That's you, all- Kevin.
Well, thank you, Hannibal Lecter. I appreciate you loving me.
Esmeralda, your siblings?
We're like Brandon's cousins. We just go like, okay, bye. We give each other a hug, and that's amazing. So
that's funny. My brother Brian punches me in the back. And he doesn't.
He punches you in the back.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a hug, and he gives me a slug in the back.
What?
I do that too, but also a hug. There's a hug in there.
There's a hug in there somewhere. It's just also accompanied by a punch.
Feelings are hard, man.
Yeah. Feelings are hard. Comedian Paul Farvar just texted. He goes, "I've never told my brother I love him, and vice versa." Paul, I think next time you're on the air, you need to fix that. I think you need to tell your brother you love him on the show.
I don't think he can do it.
Yes, he can.
You think he can?
A challenge has been laid.
A gauntlet thrown.
For Paul Farivar.
He demands satisfaction.
I demand satisfaction. I grew up as an only child. I have half siblings. I don't love them. I love them. I've never told them I love them.
I don't know them.
I don't
know them
enough.
You know them.
I've told my nieces, my siblings' children, that we may not be very close, but should you ever find that you have a kidney failure or liver damage, I will definitely get tested in order to give you if you need an organ.
Wow.
So that's what my niece said. My niece said that's deep.
That's a different version of the word "I love you," right?
It is. I would give an organ for you. I would make sure that you lived. That's all.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
Yeah. Right now, we're
that's
just
all
right
I have
now,
for you. Right
all
now.
Of us are creeping my brother Jimmy. I'm telling you, he's driving his
Jimmy,
truck.
Jimmy, we all love you so much.
Oh, you,
can we all? We all.
Jimmy, Jimmy.
Let's all go around the table you. And say why we're thankful. Good. For well,
hey, Jimmy. Kid. I don't want to make it sound like too sultry. Hold on a second. Jimmy, I love you. Doing a good job. Oh. Be safe out there. Right. Dimitri, your turn.
Jimmy. Jimmy. I love you, man.
Oh,
I love
man.
You.
You guys are creeping me out.
Jimmy, I may be in love with you.
I'm sorry, Jim. Elliot. I really am sorry I brought this up, man.
Jimmy, I really love you.
Oh, Bennett, can you tell Jimmy you love him?
Oh, man.
This should take Jimmy to the place where he needs to be.
Well, I started something I didn't realize I was going to start.
This could also go for Paul Farvar's brother if he wants to send it off to Paul. When you're in studio, Paul, we'll make sure this music is playing. Esmeralda, do you want to say anything to Jimmy?
Jimmy, I love you.
And wow, that sounded nice.
Bennett's playing some music for you. Bennett, did you have anything to say to Jimmy?
I'm just going to let the tune take it away.
Oh,
that's
music.
That's my extension
there
of
there you go.
Of
yeah, crank it up. Go ahead and crank it up. We're right into the break.
Let the music do the talking. Jim, I just want you to know this is your brother Kevin, and I still can't stand you.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is comedian Kevin Naughton, who hosts Snapshots this Monday night on December 12th. And also, we have Elliot Serrano in studio with us, our chief geek officer, who also works at the Anti-Cruelty Society. And this is a time of year when people think it's a good idea to give pets. Is it a good idea to give pets, Elliot Serrano?
Getting them as a pet, no.
If as a gift.
As a gift, correct. I mean, I'm sorry, you're right. Getting a pet as a gift, not a great idea. Although, if you're thinking about getting a pet over the holidays because, you know, the kids are out of school, I always say it's something to consider as long as you realize that the holidays can also be very hectic and it's not always the best time to be bringing a new pet into your home if you really can't devote the time that you need. But every family's different. And, you know, if the kids are out of school, you might think, hey, get them walking the dog for a bit too or taking care of the cat. So, you know, it's something to think about.
And when someone visits, do you have any pets? Kevin, you're...
Me personally?
Yes, I know your mom has a cat. Does she still have a cat?
Not anymore. She has a dog now.
Oh, she does.
Molly, the dog hates me.
Oh, no.
It's a territorial dog, and I'm not over at the house all the time, so because of that, the
you're
dog...
You're an intruder.
I'm an intruder in her territory.
What kind of dog is Molly?
She's an Australian cattle dog, I believe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
you're not part of the herd.
No, mm-mm. I'm not. I'm just a... And my sister and I, who are not over there enough, we're there once in a while... because of that, the dog just constantly barking and growling and snarling, and it just, it's...
Do you bring food when you go to
this is what I was going to say. Are there any tricks?
Treats.
Yes.
Like
you bring treats?
We have tried this, yes.
But, one of my favorite episodes of Gilmore Girls was when, so Lorelai gets a dog named Polanka, and she tells her daughter when she comes home that she has to put butter on her toes to make friends with Polanka. I'm just saying, maybe if you put butter on your toes and let Polanka lick your toes.
The dog can snarl and bark and growl. I'm going to let it happen. Butter on my toes.
If you're not committed to your mom's dog. I'm just saying, maybe you want to try the Lorelai Gilmore trick
I'm not getting that later.
It's actually, it turns out that Lorelai is just teasing her daughter, Rory, who's been gone for a while. It makes no difference. The dog was going to be weird anyway.
Whew, boy, I don't have to do the butter on the toe thing now.
But I mean, like, it kind of makes sense.
It would work for a lot of dogs, actually.
Because it would combine the taste of butter, which is obviously pleasurable, with your scent, which is on your toes, and recognize both of those as being pleasurable.
Wow. Well,
am I right, Elliot?
You know, you are actually. It's weird. Dogs are weird that way.
Yeah.
You know, they for some reason they love the smell of our socks.
Bennett's like, he's contemplating. He's trying to imagine himself in a situation where he would put butter on his toes for a dog.
Yeah, I haven't figured another one out. So
no.
That no. takes a cake as the weirdest butter toe situation I can think of.
Well, it's like the whole...
That's very funny, and I wish I would have said that as eloquently
exactly.
as you just did.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the whole... It's the whole... these days, a lot of times you will meet someone of the opposite sex, and whether you can actually date them or not completely hinges on whether you get along with their pet.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So
you're not wrong.
You know, I'm sorry. Sometimes you just got to stack the deck.
Oh, amen.
You know, so you bring... You know, it's like the whole bit. Pepperoni... Bring some bacon.
Yeah,
stuff like that that the dog or whatever cannot resist. And then that person will think, oh, you must be like a great personality that my pet just takes to you.
Well, so let me ask, and because Kevin and I have a unique history, did my cats like you? I don't remember you having a problem. They didn't dislike you because my cats hated most of my boyfriends.
Is that right?
Oh yeah.
I don't ever remember having trouble with any animal in my life. My buddy Moochie used to say all the time that every time there would be a dog around, I always got along. I get along great with animals. It's just that my mom's dog,
Molly.
Molly is the only one. Now my other brother, my brother Brian.
Do you love Brian?
Oh yeah. Right. He's the guy who punches me in the back.
I just want to make sure we love Brian Jimmy.
He's got a bulldog and his name's Meatball.
Of course he does.
Oh, that dog. I love that dog.
What kind of dog is he?
He's part Victorian. He's bulldog, and he's part Victorian bulldog, so there's a special look there.
Yeah.
But what a great dog. Can't get enough love, and he loves everybody, and he does make it easy. And if I put butter on my toes, my foot would be gone. Yeah. Tell you that right now.
You know, there are other areas other than your toes that you put butter on.
You put fingers on your fingers. You put on your elbow. Maybe if you want to do an elbow butter.
So like your on the wrists.
Inside of your wrists.
Right, the wrists, cologne.
We still talking about dogs? Because I've had some wild nights in my life.
Yes.
And I don't mind revealing some of that.
Don't say anything, Kevin.
A little dab behind the ears.
Reel it in.
All right. Kevin.
So, I don't even know what we were talking about.
I do.
I know. I'm just trying to figure out ways for you to win your mother's dog over.
Oh, that's
so that,
sweet.
I know.
Bacon grease.
You know.
Oh, bacon grease.
Bacon grease, okay.
Yeah.
I'll consider it. The only problem is there's nobody at my house over at my mom's house that I want to date. So it's really...
Oh, no, we're talking about dating. We're just talking about the dog not snarling at you.
I'll tell you, this is interesting, and I know my sister's not listening. It's worse for my sister.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, she's got a job. She's got to get up early.
Fine. We're all podcasts. This will all be podcasts.
She's going to stream. So she's going to listen to them in the morning when she wakes up.
Okay.
Well, you know, I tried to butter your toes there, and I didn't get anywhere.
Then, please.
The biscuit is unbuttered.
What's her name?
Her name is Carol.
Hey, Carol.
And yeah, when she goes over, the dog's worse with her because the other week we were both over there. Now the dog will bark a little with me and stop barking and pretty much leave me alone, and that's it. But my sister went over. I don't think she's over as much as I am. So the dog is really growling and snarling through her entire time there.
All right, tell her butter on her toes. That's more of this on 720 WGN.
Thank you.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Elliot Serrano, our Chief Geek Officer. And you can go to geektome.net for everything that he writes. And my guess is in the next couple weeks, you'll have some more stories to share because there's a movie coming out.
Lots of good stuff coming up. Yep.
I saw I've seen the trailer for Wonder Woman, and also there was a trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that people are very excited about.
Volume 2, yeah.
I'm sorry, Volume 2. Groot.
Everyone loves Baby Groot.
Yeah, everyone loves it. Now, Kevin Naughton, who hosts Snapshots this Monday on December 12th at Zanies. Go to zanies.com for more information. Are you a fan of the superhero movies by any chance, or the Star Wars?
Not the Star Wars. I saw the first one when it first came out.
The original.
Yeah, and I do like Batman movies.
Wait, did you see Star Wars and then not Empire and not Jedi?
I couldn't keep up. I found myself unable. I watched one of them and then they started turning out all these other movies. I said, you know what? I can't keep up here.
My mom never saw anything past the first Star Wars movie as well.
Yeah,
she never saw Empire. She never saw Jedi. And then we had her sit down and watch. We had her watch the what's the newest one? The
Force Awakens.
Force Awakens. She said it doesn't capture the imagination. I'm not invested.
Yeah.
And it was funny because the way she said it was as though it was a blanket statement. And of course, we were sitting there, we're like, well, it captured our imagination. I mean, when you know. when she, you know, when Ray pulls, when Ray's like, we can't take that ship, it's a piece of garbage, right? And then they turn and have to take that ship, and it turns out to
garbage
be.
Garbage will do. It's a Millennium
Garbage problem. Will do. It's yeah. A, yeah, it was, anyway, we screamed, and the first time we see, although she did get very excited when she saw Han Solo again.
Oh, yeah, when you see Harrison Ford, of course, you're going to, you know,
she got very
excited. But it's
yes,
funny.
Yes, well, Kevin, you're done.
Well, I think that I have to go along with your mother. There was nothing that I. It was a good movie, but mm-hmm. it didn't make me want to come back for more.
You got the story. The story you felt was sort of it wrapped itself up.
I was fine with just the one, mm-hmm. and that was it. Yeah,
there was no cliffhanger to it. There wasn't like what happens next moment. They have that big ceremony. They're getting their medallions or whatever.
Yeah, if I went back and revisited it and rewatched it, it was so long ago. It for me. Would be
you were a kid.
Yeah, I was just a kid, and I definitely would be like watching it for the first time.
Interesting.
I know that about that particular movie, but
I have it on VHS, by the way, so that you don't watch it like as their new digitally remastered version. Shut up, Elliot.
Oh no, I have it on VHS too.
I do. I by the way, I also have Buffy the Vampire Slayer on VHS.
I remember that about you, Patty. You and Buffy. Yeah.
Yes.
Kevin, I'm curious. So yes, what sir. Was the movie that really got you? I mean, you know what? I find this very interesting. Okay. A lot of folks that I go, hey, did you see Star Wars? Yeah. What did you think? I didn't care so much for it. Mm-hmm. What's the movie that you really liked? The Godfather. Seems like people who didn't care for Star Wars love The Godfather. Did you really like The Godfather?
I liked The Godfather, and I also liked the book.
Yes.
The Mario
the
Puzo book
is
book.
Really
yeah, I really
good.
Enjoyed the book because the art of compromise was contained within that book, and it really taught me that lesson of, watch your emotions and be able to compromise and talk to anybody about anything, no matter how difficult it is at any time. Now, if we're going to go back to a movie that I thought that my favorite movie of all time was Braveheart. Just love that movie.
Interesting.
Love the message. The whole deal, fighting for one's freedom in that manner, no matter what, without compromise. I just love that.
Interesting.
Oh yeah,
you didn't see that coming, did you?
No, I can see
Braveheart.
That. Wait, what about you did a great Stallone earlier. What do you think about the Rocky movies?
I enjoyed all the Rocky movies. That was a great character.
But those stories kept coming. You mentioned that Star Wars, like they kept churning them out, but
right,
Rocky, did the
right,
same
and
thing.
I wasn't interested in the Star Wars
enough to follow it.
Whereas the Rocky movies, to a point, I was interested because I stopped.
I liked three. I don't remember two as much, but I liked.
Oh, I watched.
I liked
two.
Rocky three, and maybe it was partly Hulk Hogan and Mr. T.
Mr. T.
Yeah.
Who I'm now friends with his daughter, and how weird is my world? Erica Nicole Clark.
Is that right?
Do you know Erica?
I do not. No,
she's a comedian here in Chicago. Do you not know that?
I didn't know
that. I will. You know what? We'll have a night. I will invite her in one night when you're
okay.
on the show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
That's her dad.
I want to hang out with Dolph Lundgren.
I don't know his daughter.
Four, you know.
I must break it.
If he dies,
yeah,
he dies.
I didn't like Rocky IV.
But that was like in the middle of the 80s and everything was patriotic and all that. It's funny because, again, the Rocky movies and the Star Wars movies came out on a similar tracks around similar times. Mm-hmm. And you can see the Star Wars movies kind of kept with us just one message, where you see the Rocky movies always kind of reflected whatever period in time that they came out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, with the Rocky IV, it was the Reagan years, very patriotic. Everyone's like, you know, oh yeah, the Russians are our enemy, but we, you know, of course, Stallone's saying we can still be friends if you could change.
And I can change.
I can change. We all can change. I can't. My Stallone's nowhere near yours.
I understand,
right? But it's funny that again there was always those messages there.
Yeah,
I'll give Stallone some credit. I mean, the dude knew how to key into what people wanted to see in movies. Because remember Cobra?
Remember that
movie?
Sure. Marion Cobretti, was his name.
Uh-huh. What's it? You're the disease.
Yeah. And I'm the cure.
Right. And there was another one, too. Like,
you guys just go ahead. I'm going to – me and Bennett. Maybe Bennett and I will have a conversation. No, I don't – what?
Yeah, it was doing the whole – the Charles Bronson-type, vigilante-type thing because – that was the Reagan years again, too. Yeah. People were very frustrated with crime in America. Mm-hmm. And Stallone's going, yeah, I'm going to give you this, you know, this cop who bent, you know, breaks the rules and, you know, he'll do what it needs to be done. And it always, he always knew how to key into, I guess, the public consciousness. And that's why, to me, when you talk to people about the kind of movies that they like, you know, folks who are really into Star Wars, it's really more into the escapism of it, right?
Right.
Because there was like, Star Wars came out after the Vietnam War was over, and we were all really down on government, and everything's like, the world is a dark, gloomy place. Gee, what does that make me think of now? You know, it's a dark, gloomy place. We need some escapism, well, and that's why it took off.
Yeah.
And then, but then you have other movies. Again, you have the Rocky movies, where it's a very quintessential American fable that if you're just this guy, an everyday Joe who's just trying to make a living and do your job, you can get a shot to make it big and be rich and do everything and be famous, mm-hmm. you know, which really, again, keyed into what people wanted to see in their films. So I'm always fascinated, you know, with those types of what people are really into. Yeah. The Braveheart, too. There's a reason why I won all those Academy Awards, because mm-hmm. it did exactly that. It key, you know, Mel Gibson knew, boom, how to key into something that people wanted yeah. to see.
One of the things that I always loved about the Stallone movies, including the First Blood and the Rambo movies, was
how he created. People love that one too.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
He always created ways to stop the enemy, and for lack of better terminology, he figured out ways to kill people that I thought were just fantastic.
But it was essentially Home Alone in the jungle.
Okay.
Because he was like setting up booby traps yeah. and all those things, you know. All you needed was, you know, little Kevin McAllister saying, okay, Mr. Stallone.
I have never related those two in my life. That is something.
I'm pretty sure now I'm going to have to ask if the writers of Home Alone actually watched Rambo and went, how do we make this a kids movie?
Really?
How do we,
that's what it is. You know?
How do we put Macaulay Culkin
yeah.
in get this Stallone movie? And Joe Pesci.
Yeah, Rambo Alone.
There. Yeah.
Rambo. There you go. Oh. By the way, isn't there another I thought that was another Rambo movie coming out and another Creed? There's going to be a Creed 2.
Oh, wow. I heard the Creed movie did very well. It was very good.
Didn't he get nominated? The gentleman who played Creed got nominated mm-hmm. for the Academy Award, yeah.
And the director of Creed is doing the new Black Panther movie for Marvel.
Oh.
But I did not know about that. I'm pretty sure Stallone's doing another John. It's John Rambo now.
John.
Because now when you, it's not just Rambo, it's John Rambo. Just like it's not the Bourne Identity or the Bourne Imperative. It's
another
Jason
good series
Bourne.
Of movies.
It's just Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
Which actually, I haven't seen the last Jason Bourne, but I did. That movie changed the fight scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed those.
When I was training, they were telling us.
Do you not train anymore?
Oh, I still. This is when I was training to get my black belt.
Okay.
I thought you were training to be Jason Bourne.
I was training to be Jason Bourne. Yeah, that's.
But I was training to be for
Kevin,
Black Ops.
Kevin trained at the Daggerbird Academy of Martial Arts.
Yeah,
martial arts.
That's right. I was training to be Jason Bourne. I read the book and I said, you know, how do I become this guy? So I remember.
Can I just say, my son who is training in martial arts as well? He's like, okay, hold up something like it's a gun, and I'm like, can we not play this game where I'm not pointing a gun at you? Uh-huh. But he knows how to basically do something where he pops my arm and puts the gun under my chin. What's going on?
You have a very good son.
He does. He steps in. He hits me here, and all of a sudden the gun is pointing right under my chin.
I tell you, you know what movie I'm waiting to see come out because it
is
had...
my son disarming his mom. I don't
yes.
know what movie that
please.
Is.
Please, part one. Yes, is the second Equalizer movie because the first one with
Denzel Washington,
he takes a gun off a guy. The guy is pointing the gun at his face, and he turns the gun on him.
Right.
Right there in the air. And I have slowed that down. I want to learn that move. That is really a beautiful move.
You can actually, there are tutorials on YouTube on how to disarm a guy with a gun and actually turn down. There's a guy who does that.
Okay.
Which is, again, it is pretty fascinating. I do not have the testicular fortitude.
You gotta see Griffin do this. It's a weird move. I'm standing there. I'm holding a gun. Next thing I know, it's under my chin. I'm like, am I shooting myself too?
Yeah,
happening?
What keeps them from like shooting you before you get up to them?
That I don't know.
You know,
that's why it's such a you better have. Well, that's why you got
fortitude,
fast
as you said, testicular fortitude. Yeah.
You just do it. You know what? There's no. If you hesitate, you're dead.
You're right.
So don't hesitate.
They're already pointing a weapon at you.
Yeah, just do the move because they're already thinking you're not going to move. So. Excuse me, I caught myself almost swearing. That just do the damn move. Do the move.
I have to do this move. More after this on 720 WGN 312-981-7200. Join our conversation anytime. And by the way, we do have a trivia question coming up after this break. It has to do with Andy Griffith, the Andy Griffith Show. So that's a little wide ranging right there. I know it's a little wide ranging. This is a question created by our very own Kevin Naughton. You can win a tree, a Lightkeeper Pro from where is it from? Keep your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets and a scent keeper for real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree. Visit lightkeeperpro.com. We're giving away one right after this break, as well as a pair of tickets to Zanies on Monday.
Cool.
This is just happy making. This whistling, this show. Andy Griffith, who, by the way, was a stand-up comic.
Oh, yeah. He was good.
Great monologist.
He was good. I think he had a big bit. I don't remember.
The football bit.
The football bit
was one of his greats. And he also had a movie that my husband kept trying to get me to watch during the election season, which seemed to have some a little bit of shades of what was going on in the last year. I couldn't watch. I didn't want to, as much as I talked about politics on the show, and we'll continue. And we had a listener last night say that they're tired of talking about politics, but it's no longer politics that we're talking about. Esmeralda, is it really politics when we're just talking about what's going on and it's current events now, right? It's what's actually happening.
Right, because I don't know. It's like irony.
It is.
I know it when I see it, but I couldn't describe it.
Yeah, I don't know it. I'm
pretty sure. Like a lot of my dates, you know? Yeah. I know it when I see it, but I can't believe what I'm looking at. I can't describe this guy.
You and Elliot can have conversations, it sounds like. Oh, man. Well, I think that Andy Griffith is one of the greatest comedies of all time. Such a charming show. And everything, I mean, like, one, he was such a great dad. You know?
Yeah, he was. He loved Opie.
He loved Opie. He put up with a lot from his
even though he named him Opie, he still loved him.
He loved him. But from Barney Fife's character, who just,
Don Knotts. Yeah, he was great.
It was an amazing show with so many great characters, from the barber to Gomer Pyle to just everybody on the show.
Yeah. It's a good point. Gomer Pyle went off and did Gomer Pyle USMC.
Mm-hmm. And then Jim Nabors.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was
Jim Nabors. Yeah.
It was Jim Nabors. And then, I remember.
Golly!
Yeah.
And then good.
I used to love when Ernest T. Bass and the Darling family would come out of the mountains and have a little fun with them, you know. Say hello to the sheriff, boys.
Oh, man.
Sit there with their mouths open. Oh, they're all keyed up.
Yeah. Tremendous show. Now, do you get a chance to watch it, Bennett? Because it's on at like 4 in the morning on WGN before, like 3 in the morning before WGN.
That's way before my time.
Yeah, but it's on reruns. Elliot?
You know, it always got me, and it's funny. I'm a Puerto Rican, okay? My parent, first generation, mom and dad moved here when they were, you know, 18, 19. Didn't speak a lick of English. Mm-hmm. What were we watching on television? My dad loved the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah, is that right?
Watched that. I watched the Andy Griffith Show with my dad. It was like, there was something about that show. It, just the way, you know, again, Andy Griffith's, the way he talked about people. You watch that
the
show
kindness.
Today.
It was all, he was all about kindness. Kindness.
But you watch that show today. And they're everything, the philosophy about life and mm-hmm. people and how to treat people, it's like Mark Twain. It's timeless.
It is.
It still holds.
Yes, mm-hmm. it does.
One of my favorite episodes of that show was, remember the episode when some bank robbers came to Mayberry and the detectives from the big city mm-hmm. came to Mayberry and they were like, they were treating Andy like some podunk, you know, hick. From a small town, he doesn't know anything,
right.
And they're like these big city cops.
Yeah, they call him a chicken farmer,
right.
Or something like that.
Yeah. And then he's like, and Barney's getting angry. You know, it's these guys. They're coming in here from the big city,
sure.
Right? But it in all that, and I remember he was so serious at that point. You saw Andy Griffith as a real detective. And as someone who took his job seriously, and he's the one who ends up catching these crooks.
Right.
And you sit there and you go, wow, there was still, even though he was kind and kind of, not simplistic, but, you know, there was a simpleness about him. a basic quality, he was still a sophisticated person who knew human nature.
You know, that's interesting you talk about that, because I was okay, if you're going to really study the comedy, that's a great thing that you're talking about. He had his line in the sand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, as a father and as a sheriff, he had his line in the sand, and they goofed off constantly on that show. And to digress slightly, I must also say that Jed Clampett of the Beverly Hillbillies had the same thing. Mm-hmm. He had a line in the sand.
Yes.
And he would always say, now hold on. And if he said, now hold on, you know that you pushed him too far. And that's a great thing to have as a character. Whoever wrote that in and developed that as a character, I think did a wonderful job, because it made them more human than ridiculous.
Yes.
It's funny, because if you wrote those characters today, they might get written as caricatures or as something like making
right.
fun.
The goof or the
like,
hillbilly.
Yeah, the hicks yeah. and the rednecks and such. And to me, you're absolutely right. That was another show, Beverly Hillbillies. I remember watching that show and going, wow, I would actually.
I loved Ellie. Who didn't love Ellie?
Right. I would want to hang out with these people.
Always. Right, but she was a tomboy. She loved animals. Mm-hmm. I know the guys liked her, but mm-hmm. Ellie was adorable.
Yes, she was.
And Granny was a pistol.
Oh, yes, she was.
Ryan. Yeah, that woman was what? And again, a great character.
Mm-hmm.
And she made you forget that she was doing a character. Mm-hmm. You just thought this was this crazy Tennessee mountain woman, you know, from Bug Tussle, that just acted that way. Or at least I did. I bought into the whole thing.
Yeah.
I will say this, though, and this is one of my own personal faults. Green Acres.
Here we go.
Okay.
Dolly.
I totally sided with...
Zsa.
No.
No.
Eddie Albert.
Yeah. I go, these people are driving me nuts.
Yeah.
I just want to be a farmer. Right. I want to do my thing. Everyone's getting on my nerves.
By the way, I just watched an episode of Petticoat Junction, and it was so charming. I haven't watched that in a long time. But I mean, like, but the fact that they would swim in the town's water supply was a little bit creepy.
Yeah,
we don't
have enough of that going on.
Well, but who wants
to
drink that water supply? Okay, so here's our trivia question. We're going to take a break in a moment, so you've got a chance during the break to give us a call. 312-981-7200. As we were saying, there were so many great characters on the Andy Griffith Show, including the actor Hal Smith, who played Otis Campbell, the drunk, who often ended up in the jail, really just, to spend the night. He would often end up there. They didn't put him in jail. He was just trying to sleep it off. So he was also a renowned voice actor who provided the voice for many cartoon characters, and including some of the early Winnie the Pooh characters. Which character did he play on Winnie the Pooh? So 312-981-7200 for a pair of tickets to Zanies on Monday, as well as a Lightkeeper Pro for your complete tool, repairing holiday light sets, and a scent keeper for real Christmas tree scent on your artificial tree. Everyone can visit lightkeeperpro.com. Again, which voice did Hal Smith, who also was the character Otis the Drunk on The Andy Griffith Show, what Winnie the Pooh character did he provide the voice for? 312-981-7200. Howard will take a call in just a moment on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Let me take Mary's story real quick. Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Patty?
Very well. What do you want to tell us?
Well, Howard McNeil, who played Ed the Barber, before he was Ed the Barber on TV, he was Doc on Gunsmoke, the radio program.
Oh, I did not know that.
And Andy Griffin asked him to come to his show. Now, the last year of it, when they were going strong, the last year, Howard McNeil suffered a massive stroke, and he could not stand. And the producers wanted to fire him, and Andy said no. And you will see, if you look at the last year, he is either standing behind his barber chair with help.
Really?
Can't see,
I did not know
or
that.
Or he's sitting down on the bench in front of his barber.
Wow.
So that shows you the kind of people they had there.
Yeah, no kidding. And that's the thing, loyalty, really, when you find someone like that who will watch your back, that's a good thing to have. Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Mary, would you like to go to the comedy show on Monday night at Zanies?
You know what? I just got out of the hospital.
Oh, Mary.
And,
You know what?
Well, can I missed you.
Can I send you a pizza from Lou Malnati's?
Oh, that would be great.
Aww. Let's send you a pizza. Let's, take one night where you don't have to worry about mm-hmm. making anything or anyone having to bring something over.
Thank you, Patty.
Oh, no, Mary. My pleasure. Thank you for that.
You don't need to do this, though.
Oh, I, Mary. Yes, I do, because I want to. Wanting makes me need to do it. So Bennett's going to take your information, and we'll get that out to you for Lou Malnati's. That's a great story, and okay. I'm so glad to have learned that. I love knowing that about the show.
I remember hearing about that, that he had had some sort of a stroke and that he had to sit down, and it, whether in the barber chair or on the park or that little bench out front. And that's when they actually had a discussion once. It was Andy Griffith and Howard McNair. They're sitting on that bench, and they were talking about the quotations of Calvin Coolidge.
and, how great is that?
And so because Howard McNair was saying, well, didn't Calvin Coolidge say that? And Andy said, no, Calvin Coolidge didn't say that. He didn't say everything, Floyd. And he goes, he must have said something. He was a president.
That's great. And we were talking about Otis, played by Hal Smith, who provided the voice of a Winnie the Pooh character. Janine, what character did he provide the voice for?
The owl.
The owl.
Oh, nice.
Well, yeah, that's are you a fan of Winnie the Pooh?
No, I had to look it up.
You had to that's you know what? You are the fastest Googler, and I appreciate that. And I love your honesty. We're going to send you a Lightkeeper Pro, your complete tool for repairing holiday light sets. Sound good?
Sounds perfect.
And where are you calling from in the 262?
I'm calling from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Oh, so you can't make it to the show on Monday. I was going to give you a pair of tickets to Zanies as well. That's all right. Oh, you're from the 414.
I would have, though, if I could have.
That's all right. Well, someday we'll do a show in Milwaukee, I promise, and we'll make sure you get tickets to that. Sound good?
Oh, sounds perfect.
Well, thank you. We're going to send you a Lightkeeper Pro for your Christmas tree. Have a great night, Jeannie.
Thanks. I've been having a great time. I just want to tell Polly that I love him, too.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. Oh, that's very sweet. Good night, Jeannie. Hold on for Bennett. And just want to let everyone know we've given a pizza to our friend Mary, Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Hey! You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Up in traffic is Esmeralda Leon. I'm going with Esmeralda first. I'm trying to switch it up, and I feel like I always go to you last. Hi, Es.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good.
I'm going to miss you. I'm leaving on Friday for Los Angeles.
Oh, that's sweet.
We haven't hung out in a while.
You can tune in to WGNRadio.com.
I don't know who's filling in for me yet. I know that...
That's a company girl up there.
Are you filling in for me at all next week? Or
I don't think so.
Oh, all right. You guys did a great job. You and John Hansen.
Thank you.
The cocktails you guys had in here look ridiculous.
I know. Were they crazy? I can't wait to go there.
Where was it?
It was a Baptiste and Bottle.
Baptiste and Bottle.
Yes, they're in the Conrad Hotel, 20th floor.
There was like a whole performance going on
Yeah, it was
here.
Crazy. It was insane. And then they gave us these... glazed like almonds and walnuts and stuff, and then with just bacon in it. Pieces of bacon with it.
You got a bacon
mixed up in there. It was wonderful.
Bacon's just making its way into everything.
It is.
I don't mind.
I had a maple bacon donut the other day.
Yes.
Did you?
That was so good.
Really good.
Fire cakes.
I had a maple bacon margarita last night.
What?
I'm teasing. I drank about.
You were at one of your favorite watering holes restaurants last night.
I was with my friend Noel, the bartender at Garcia's in Lincoln Square. The guy's great. Oh, can he make a margarita? And my friend Jorge's there, too. These guys are great.
And you're a bartender, so if you're saying it's a good margarita.
Yeah, I think they, I don't know if they're the best, but for me, they're the best.
So are they using fresh lime juice?
Yes.
Because you can't.
Everything's fresh.
Yeah, because if you're going to a bar and they're making margaritas with sweet and sour, stop it. Mm. Don't.
Thank you.
Get you some fresh lime juice.
Yeah. These guys. It's almost like it's the perfect place for me to go, and I just enjoy it because it is, everything's fresh, and it's so friendly there. They make everybody feel at home, which I'm not used to that.
Well, you live in Lincoln Square, Esmeralda. I was at I walked into a coffee shop. I was running errands one day, the total girl afternoon of doing nails, going to do a little shopping, and I'm like, I need some coffee and something to eat. And I'm sitting there, and I see Naughton walk by.
Yeah, because I live right above the coffee shop.
He lives right above the coffee shop. Oh. Yeah. We haven't seen each other in daylight in years.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, really, because we're comics. You come on the show in the middle of the night. That sounded weird. But still.
Well, you know what? Yeah, it did.
Yes. I never see you in the daylight. Yeah. I see Elliot once in a while in the daylight. It was weird to see Bennett today in the daylight. I would see you once in a while when I would come in to do the Cochrane show.
But it was once in a blue moon.
Once in a blue moon. I was supposed to do his show this week. We are performing together on New Year's Eve.
That you are, and I'll also be at that show.
Are you going to be at that show?
I'll be helping out with that show.
Can you tell me where I'm going to be?
I'll look it up.
I'm a comedian, and I don't know if Naughton's ever had this problem, but I just know I have a date, and then like as I get closer to it, I'll figure out the logistics. Okay. I know that I'm booked. I don't know. Like, do you always know exactly where you're going to be, like 2 weeks out?
Well, I used to book about 6 months out.
Right.
And I'm not going to say that I would know every single specific date. It depends. If you're doing a lot of one-night gigs, or one-nighters, whatever you want to call them, I remember I would do a string of like six. I'd go Tuesday through Sunday or something like that, and I'd be in a different town every single day. By the time I'd get Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I'd take a nap, wake up. I had no idea where I was.
Oh, that's – well, and Mueller runs were like that. Now, Elliot, I know you thought briefly about getting into stand-up comedy, maybe more than briefly about getting into stand-up comedy. The more you hear my road stories, how alluring is it?
You know, it's funny because I think had I gotten into stand-up when I was first planning on getting into stand-up, we probably would have been crossing paths touring.
Yes.
At that point. Although I don't think I would have been like on the level you've been on.
I don't know what I did. I did something at one point where I looked at the routes, the clubs, and whether or not Amtrak went through those towns. I don't know if I ever told you this, Kevin, because Mueller had all these gigs like between Chicago and Montana, and there were a lot of towns. I know it sounds so glamorous. Are you all impressed with
Chicago and
Chicago and Montana? Because Yoder had everything between Chicago and New York, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much all the everything east of Chicago, everything in Indiana and Michigan. Mm-hmm. He had Ohio and Pennsylvania. I know that Carol Pennington had some of those as well. Yeah. There were a couple of bookers, but Mueller really had all of those, the Great Plains. He had Nebraska.
He seemed to have. Yeah. I didn't work for him very much. He got upset with me.
Oh, you're my friend. You are in good company.
I know I am.
You're in very, very good company.
I know I am.
What was that, Elliot?
Hello. And this is like not in, totally unrelated, but okay. So when you mentioned maple bacon margarita,
Here we go.
I Googled maple bacon margarita. Can you believe?
Yes.
There is no maple bacon margarita. There are maple margaritas. There are bacon margaritas. But there's no maple bacon margarita. You, my friend,
Kevin,
might have hit on something.
Your challenge now.
As the narrator on the Bullwinkle cartoon series, tune in next time for the further adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle as they continue to make maple and bacon margaritas.
Wow.
That's another point of frustration for me.
What?
The Rocky and Bullwinkle always ended on a cliffhanger that never resolved.
It was never resolved. It was never addressed.
Tune in the next week, and it's like a completely new episode. I'd be like, wait, what happened?
What happened last week?
What?
With Captain Peach Fuzz and Fearless Leader and all these. I used to love that and the Fractured Fairy Tales and the Once Upon a Time in a Little Village, and there'd be some maniac and a prince and all kinds of stuff. I love those things.
Esmeralda, do you feel like they watched that cartoon a little more closely than we did?
Yeah, no, I didn't really watch that.
Well,
what's her face looked cool.
I was I don't know who.
What's her name? What's her
face? Natasha.
Natasha.
She looked cool.
First we take over America, then we kill Moose and Squirrel.
Yeah.
Oh, that seems very real right now.
There's a reason why he's a stand-up and I'm single.
Moose and Squirrel. Yeah.
Moose and Squirrel. I was more of a fan of, I liked Underdog.
Oh, yeah.
When criminals in this world are fear. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah, I know the whole that was theme song.
That was, let's see, the Underdog series with Simon Bar Sinister.
Who was the voice of? Which was the voice? Who was?
Of who?
The voice of Simon Bar Sinister was whom?
Oh, we don't.
I'm not
Mr. Potter.
Was it Lionel Barrymore?
Lionel Barrymore.
No.
Is that right? Yes, Lionel
Barrymore
was the voice of Simon Bar Sinister.
Get out of here.
On Underdog, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That. So whenever anyone talks
says,
about
be my Valentine.
Yes.
No.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So when everyone talks about Oscar, I mean, he was a noted actor of his time. He won Academy Awards, didn't he?
I don't know that, he was in, you know, a lot of movies and a great actor.
And doing animation,
yeah,
of all things.
Well, who was it? Larry Storch was the voice of Mr. Whoopi, the educator on Tennessee Tuxedo.
With the penguin and the walrus?
Yeah, the penguin and the walrus.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You're kidding.
Of course, Don Adams was
Tennessee Tuxedo.
Who was the voice of Sherman?
Peabody and Sherman.
Peabody and Sherman, Mr. Whoopi, but Mr. Peabody.
These are cartoons that Bennett has never heard of.
I probably wasn't even born when these.
Well,
were
that's
around.
Not really neither here nor there.
Either way.
They're old cartoons. Those cartoons are old enough that I wasn't born when they first, a lot of these were first created.
But Channel 32 played them.
Oh, yeah.
That, the Banana Splits, all those shows.
And by the way, you can get the theme from the Banana Splits, and you can play that on a jukebox. I found that out Sunday night.
Can you please find the theme song from Banana Splits?
Three Banana, four.
Oh, apparently they'll just sing
banana,
it for us.
Six Banana, yeah. More.
Yeah. Oh, you want to throw a bar up for grabs, play that loud.
Wait, and I think one of the reasons I like the show Monkees is that it was part, as much as it was a, you know, a live action show, it was kind of cartoonish.
Yeah.
They were very silly. I don't know why.
The
Monkees. Mm-hmm. And I think Banana Splits were in the, like, for me, those all kind of run together.
Well, the Monkees. Oh. The Monkees were the ones who gave us the music video.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, people don't realize that that show brought us, gave us the first boy band. The first manufactured boy brand by media, and gave us the first music videos, the before MTV. So people are, you know, it's like that was cutting edge stuff.
You know, that's I found this out too after doing a little bit of research that the Monkees and Don Kirshner argued so much, and Don Kirshner was so fed up with them trying to get things done his way. That he then created, he said, I need to create a band that won't talk back to me. So he created the Archies.
Yep, exactly. Yep, the Archies would come later.
Because
correct.
They would not talk back to him. I love that.
But the Monkees were made as an answer to the Beatles.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so it was like the American version of the Beatles.
Interesting, yeah. Because as you were describing what you were describing about the Monkees, I started thinking of A Hard Day's Night. And, the you know, they play the song and then they run around and do all kinds of wacky stunts, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was the first video. But I hear what you're saying in the way that it was presented. The Monkees were manufactured.
Well, the Hard Day's Night was a movie, whereas the Monkees
this was
were
an
television.
Actual TV show.
Do you have,
but
theme
the
song
Banana
for
Splits
me?
Were yes. The true originals.
Sure.
Oh, this makes me happy.
How many bananas?
Sing
how many?
Those.
I'm exhausted.
Bennett, does this mean anything to you at all? Not even a little bit. Esmeralda?
I've heard of it, but I've never seen an episode.
And you couldn't go back. Now, there's something that did not hold. There's certain shows that don't hold up.
This doesn't hold up?
Oh, you can't watch this. Yeah. There's just no way.
Wait. Hold on. Danger Island.
Strike one.
Okay. The Adventures of Huck Finn.
Or strike two. Go ahead, I got more strikes.
All the strikes.
Squiddly Diddly.
Okay. Oh, wait now.
Magilla Gorilla.
Magilla Gorilla.
Hilarious. Him and Mr. Peebles,
Gorilla for sale.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
It always drove me nuts that Magilla, I mean, let's face it, first, why would you sell a gorilla in a pet store? Although, why wouldn't you buy a gorilla that wears
pants,
you
got to buy that gorilla.
Suspenders, uh-huh. And a hat.
Sure.
I mean, that gorilla, and he talks.
Yeah.
I mean, Harambe has nothing on this gorilla.
Talking gorilla, I'm buying it. Yeah.
So, and they always returned them at the end. What kind of refund policy?
It didn't work out. Yeah. It just did not work out.
People's pet shop.
Let's take a break here and just ponder the thrilling TV era that apparently the three of us were raised in. I think we're not the only ones. I know there are people that Bennett and Esmeralda. This might be, you know. You might have to Google some of these, go on YouTube. What would you recommend? What would be the one that you think stands up to the test? I think the Monkees hold up.
Monkees hold up really well.
Oh, no, I love the Monkees.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Monkees are great.
You know, some of their music was fantastic, I think.
No, and I agree.
The Monkees. Like, I was playing some of that. So, yeah. Yeah. There's no, some of their stuff is really, even the stuff that they had a song called Daily Nightly that was the first song that they used a Moog synthesizer on. And it was so psychedelic and out there it was a mind-blowing song. It was really cool.
Well, there you go. Maybe we have to listen to that one. Can you pull that one up? Daily Nightly? Is the name of it? All right.
Yeah, it's pretty far out.
All right. Well, instead of doing a give me something, tell me something good, maybe we'll play that when we come back. It is time for Tell Me Something Good. Just a moment on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Call in, Jimmy. Tell Kevin you love him.
Tell me something good.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It's time for Tell Me Something Good. It's time for something, and it's Tell Me Something Good. Bennett, you're going to go first this time. You didn't see that coming. I know. Boom, on the spot. Besides the fact that I've pretty much made sure that the studio is filled with food the last three nights, it's because of the holiday season. That's true.
And my mother would be very happy because she loves to entertain and loves to make food, so you're living vicariously through my mother.
Although nothing that's come in the studio has been anything I've made.
That is okay because all still tastes great.
It's been good food.
It's been really good.
Thank you to Kevin.
Who brings treats.
Thank you to Dimitri from Demo's Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, Knife and Tying, they brought us macaroni and cheese with bacon sausage.
See, bacon makes everything, Chista.
Yeah, including margaritas.
Yeah, apparently.
Do you have something good for us besides the fact that you've been well-fed for multiple days in a row?
That probably takes the cake, but now since I have the whiskey and cookies in front of me, I'll be sleeping like a rock tonight.
Whiskey and a cookie is back, everybody. Which is something that Elliot and I created when we were out at the Equestrian Connection fundraiser at the Marty's Barn Party.
I'm still waiting for that dude from the bar to come in and hang out with us.
I know. He's the owner of Lottie's. Do you know the owner of Lottie's?
Who?
The owner of Lottie's.
I do not.
Lottie's is the bar where they shoot, they have the parties and all the guys hang out from Chicago PD and Chicago Fire on the show.
Oh, okay.
He said, yeah, I'll be there. I said, dude, don't tease me.
I'll get a hold of him.
Get a hold of him.
I will.
Come in for whiskey and a cookie.
Yeah, it was partly because of him. Mm-hmm. I went to the bar and I got a glass of whiskey and then they were giving out cookies. And I was a happy girl.
Oh.
So that's how that happened.
But they were huge cookies, man. It was like, the cookie was like the size of your face.
It was good.
How can you not be happy with a cookie that big?
And thus, whiskey and a cookie was born.
Whiskey and a cookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Esmeralda, you got something good?
I woke up at 4 p.m. today.
Oh, see?
Wow.
Okay.
I slept so long.
Can I say, it's cold outside. I have a lot of blankets on me. Why
bother?
Yeah,
I have at least like 7 blankets on top of me.
There comes a point, there's a tipping point of, it's warm and also the weight of it. Don't you think like even more
drowsy? And
it's
super dark in my room.
Yeah.
So I think I just realized I was going to sleep for maybe, I woke up at about 2. And I was going to wake up, sleep for maybe another half hour, and then it was 4.
I'm just gonna drowse out.